goal. So today in part three then, what I want to do is I want to shift gears and turn a corner. Today's message is called An Even Voice. And what I want to do is I want to talk about not how we deal with, we've learned a lot about how we deal with mean people in the first two messages, but today I want to talk about how we stop or we prevent ourselves from becoming the mean person in the story. Because so often, we realize that we can become the mean person in our own story. And today I want to talk about the power of words. The idea that one of the ways we characterize, one of the ways that we identify, one of the ways that we talk about or describe mean people is this. Mean people say mean things. Mean people, of course, do mean things, but more often than not, the most classic or the most obvious way that mean people demonstrate their meanness is by saying mean things. Here's a question. Have you ever been crushed by words? Well, if you're a living being that's cognizant and listening right now, then the answer is yes. We all have stories in the past where words were weaponized against us. And words are our weapons. Words are weapons. Oftentimes, we don't need swords or grenades or bombs or poison. Our words are so powerful. Do you remember the pain of being in secondary school and trying to figure out life and trying to get someone to go out with you, and you're hanging out with that girl if you're a guy, and you're building, and eventually it's a point where you have this open-hearted conversation, and she turns to you and says, "Let's just be friends. I mean, I've always considered you more like a brother than anything else." It's like, oh my gosh, oh, you know. So yeah, we can create this like friendship circle, and you can be my best friend. I'll share all my secrets. Oh, your friends are going, "No, I don't want to be your friend. I want to kiss you. I don't want to be your friend. Don't friend zone me. Don't make me your brother. That's weird," right? We all know the pain of melodramatic childhood drama. But it can get deeper. Some of us are living under the lie that someone close to us, whether it be a teacher or an uncle or a grandfather, or maybe a parent said this, "You're a disgrace. You're a disgrace. You're a disgrace." Or worse, "I'm ashamed of you." What's so interesting is, oftentimes we think about our lives, we can go back and we can identify all the negative words that were spoken into our lives, but it's so hard to identify and remember the positive ones. The reason for this is because words are weighty. Words are weighty. Not just the spoken words, but even unspoken words are weighty. And again, in all my years pastoring and encouraging and counseling people, I've never heard someone come and say, "You know, I'm so broken, I'm so upset, I'm so confused because my boss never said this, or my friend never said that, or my coach never said this." Yet when we're in those primary relationships like a marriage, parents, siblings, oftentimes I'll talk to people, counsel people, and they'll be living 10, 15, 20, 30, 40, 50, sometimes even 60, 70 years still carrying the pain of what wasn't spoken. How many men in the last generation never heard their father say, "I love you"? Never heard their father say, "I'm proud of you"? Maybe today in Navan and Dock Dublin, you, even though you're this generation, that's still your story. You never heard the most important figure in your life, or supposed to be one of the most important figures in your life, verbally acknowledge their feelings and sentiment towards you by saying, "I love you and I'm proud of you." Sometimes it isn't just what's said, sometimes it's what should have been said that wasn't said that still has an impact in our lives. How powerful are words? Words are weighty. Words carry weight, and all of us, in some way, shape, or form, if you think about our lives and who we are and how we are and what we're doing, all of us are the sum total, in a sense, of words that were spoken to us, words that were spoken about us, and words that were spoken over us. And again, we talk about this often because what we got to be careful of is that we don't end up seceding or giving away the direction of our lives to try to prove some person in the past who may even be dead wrong. We got to be careful that our whole life isn't trying to prove someone wrong, that because we didn't have an affirming, loving relationship with our father and mother, or because our older brother thought we were weak and foolish, or because, you know, we were told this is a kid or rejected. We got to be careful that we don't end up making choices that lead to directions, that lead to destinations, that are all to prove some person wrong who doesn't care about you, doesn't love you, is not even thinking about you. We got to make sure that our directions and our priorities in life are being determined by a Father in heaven who does love us, who is for us, who does affirm us, and has an extraordinary purpose for our lives. So here's the thing. It's easy to acknowledge how words can impact us, right? It's easy to go, okay, and you know, more often than not, when we talk about this, this is the direction that we go. But right now, what I want to do is I want to pull the handbrake and turn, do a right angle turn for a second, because today's message is not how words impact us, how mean people affect us. Today, I want to turn the focus of the series and look at actually how our words can impact others. We can acknowledge how words impact us, but can we admit, are we open to confession? Are we open to realizing that actually, as words are powerful and words are weighty and our lives testify, or we have evidence in our own experience of how people were mean to us, can we also therefore acknowledge that our words are also equally weighty and our words also are equally powerful? And we got to be careful of the fact that we speak words that are impacting those that we love, those we care for, and the world in which we're in. So what we're going to do for the next 3 weeks then is we're going to build on this thought. I want to give you three dynamics that determine what people hear regardless of what we say. Three dynamics that determine what people hear regardless of what we say. What we're going to try to do is to try to take control of our own narrative in such a way that we can ensure that we are not the mean person in the story. Of course, there'll be advice along the way as to how we deal with what mean people say to us and what to do about them. But more importantly, how we in our marriages, in our friendships, in our workplaces, on social media, in our communities, whether it be Navan, Dublin Dock, wherever we are, that we ensure that we don't become the mean person, but we become the person that God wants us to become. So the first dynamic number one, we're going to turn to God's word, and believe it or not, we're going to look at one verse. We're going to look at two verses at the end, one you've already seen, and one's a new one. But for the bulk of the message, I want to look at one verse today. It's found in the book of Ephesians, chapter 4, and we're going to read verse 29. Now, in context, the book of Ephesians is actually a letter, and it was written by the Apostle Paul, and it was written to a church just like ours, in modern-day Turkey, in an ancient city called Ephesus. So the city was called Ephesus, and someone from Ephesus was called an Ephesian. Therefore, it's a letter to the people who live there. It's a letter to people, the Ephesians, okay? And what Paul is doing in this letter, if you read it, it's one of the most powerful books there is in the whole New Testament, but he's explaining what it means to have a relationship with Christ. He's explaining how God is building his church. He's explaining how we, as Jesus followers, should live our lives in light of what God has done for us. And then he gives advice about how we should live together communally as the church in the world. And again, if you're here today and you're not a Jesus follower, you're just a skeptic, you're just searching, just Google us, you're invited, you're so, so welcome. Nothing of what I talk about today applies to you. Nothing. I have no right to infer my belief on you. However, what you'll find is if you put this wisdom into practice, it will make your life better. But if you're a Jesus follower, if you're someone who says, I follow Jesus, and my life is submitted to him, then what Paul is telling us isn't suggestive. It's directive. He's giving us imperative. He's saying, this is how we should be as Jesus followers in the world. And so, in chapter 4, he talks about unity in the community, what it means to be united as Jesus' people, and what it means to live as people of the light in a very dark world. And then, in verse 29, he says this, do not let any unwholesome talk come out of your mouths. Do not let any unwholesome talk come out of your mouths. So what he's saying is, and again, Jesus taught us earlier on in the Gospels, that from what's happening in our heart, from the overflow of our heart, the mouth speaks. So oftentimes, what's coming out of our mouths is actually reflective of what's in our heart. That's a whole different message. Today, I want to talk about the practicality. The practicality is this. Your mouth is like a gate. Your mouth is a portal. Your mouth is a door. And you are the gatekeeper. You are responsible for what comes out of your mouth. You're responsible. It's like the other day I was flying back to Ireland from Manchester and I got to the airport and to get in the line for security, I just showed my boarding pass. I get in the security line, I get to security, then I have to put my bags through and all that kind of stuff and they're all checked. And then I get to passport control and I show my passport and my boarding pass. Now I'm in the terminal. I get to my gate. I go to the gate. The guy will see my boarding pass and my passport. I show him that. I walk literally 50 feet. It was almost like deja vu. There was another guy saying, can I see your boarding pass and passport? I went, I just did this like 30 feet ago. He goes, yeah. He said, that was the airport. This is the airline. I'm like, okay, boarding pass and passport. Do it again. Get the plane. And sometimes what happens is as you're boarding the plane, the flight attendant might ask you one more time to see your boarding pass. Why is all that security necessary? Because if you don't check who's coming in, bad things happen. Sometimes if you don't check who's going out, bad things happen. These people act as gatekeepers in our world to make sure that we are safe. And even though it's inconvenient, even though sometimes it can be frustrating, we've got to acknowledge they're doing it for our well-being. In the same way, we should think about, man, is there a passport control in my mouth? Like, am I conscious that I might be releasing terrorism into the world verbally? That I might be releasing nasty, toxic, trash talk that's harmful and hurtful? Paul is saying, hey, we have a responsibility. We are the gatekeepers of our mouths. Now, I know what you're thinking because, it's the ultimate excuse, and we all have the same excuse. On the one hand, we might be in a bad place going through a bad time, and sometimes we say things we regret. But more often than not, when we're allowing unwholesome, and that word unwholesome in the Greek literally means like trash, garbage, sewage, like the root of the word is like rotten fish. Like it's just trash talk. Like when we let that trash talk come out, more often than not, what we would say to people is like, well, I was just being honest. I was just trying to do the right thing. I was just telling the truth. I was just being honest. Let me just break this down for a second and clarify something. This is very important. Honesty is making sure that everything you say is true. Now watch this. Honesty, however, is not saying everything that is true. Yeah. Can I help with this? Honesty is making sure everything that I've said is factual, accurate, verifiable, and true. But honesty is not simply stating everything that is true. If you simply live your life stating everything is true, you will be friendless, spouseless, childless, you'll be unemployed, you'll be lonely, you'll be a vagabond, no one will want to be around you. Because although we think things, observe things, and make judgments, we understand that to coexist in the world, we can't just say things as we see things, believing that we're being honest. Because sometimes we realize that honesty is not telling everything we see or think all the time. Honesty is making sure that what is said and has been said is true and accurate. But wisdom is knowing when not to say a thing. And we're going to see in a second what the motive, what the intent behind that is. But we can't hide behind the excuse, I was just trying to be honest. See, Apostle Paul continues, do not let any unwholesome talk come out of your mouths, but only. What does but only mean? This is so incredible. Watch this. But only means but only. Now again, if you're not a Jesus follower, this is suggestive. You could take these principles and put them to work in your life, and I believe they will make your life better. But if you're a Jesus follower, here's the imperative. It's not an option. It's not and if you feel like it. If you're up for it, if you don't mind, if you're feeling good today, it's like, hey, if you're, don't let any trash talk come out, any trash talk come out of your mouth, but only this. Only what? Only what is helpful for building others up. I'll come back to this in a second. Only what is helpful. One of the things that should distinguish us as the people of God in the world is that we try, and again, we're not perfect, and the definition isn't perfection, only Jesus is perfect, but it is to the definition, the thing that should define us is love, that we should be loving, not perfect, but loving. Love demonstrates itself in this, that we are conscious gatekeepers of what comes out of our mouths, making sure that as much as possible, as little trash talk comes out, and the only thing that's coming out of our mouths all the time is what is helpful. Now you're thinking, man, that sounds so Christian. It sounds so soft and lovely, but does it work? I mean, only saying things that are helpful, does that work at work? Does that work at home? Does that work in the world? Like, how can I, as an employee, be like, hey, or an employer, hey, employee, I know I'm paying you a lot of money, but it would really help me if you could be helpful by doing your job. So when you're ready, and when you feel like it, can you do the thing that you've been contracted and employed to do? Does that work at home? Like, what does it mean to only say helpful things to your kids? Have you ever seen people who try to parent their kids in a way where they never get angry, never show emotion, everything's all, oh, it's grand. Like, it's like, so what's your parent strategy? Oh, I just believe in allowing them to flourish and in a free environment to become their own people. And of course, as they're talking to you, like swinging out chandeliers in the background and stabbing each other and biting each other's fingers off, you're thinking, oh, interesting theory. It's like, how can this work at home or in the world? Like, it's like the world is hard and mean and difficult. And if you want to get ahead, if you want to survive, you can't surely just say things that are helpful. What the Apostle Paul is saying is, yes, you can. Now, understand, saying things that are helpful does not mean we say the things people want to hear all the time. Sometimes the best way we can help people is by offering wisdom, our instruction, our perspective that may challenge them, that they may not welcome at first, that only after a period of time do they go, you know what, actually, man, I'm so sorry for my reaction. You were right. Thank you for having that conversation with me, because I realized I was being a complete idiot. And it was actually as a result of our conversation that I went away and processed, and I realized that what felt like a hindrance was actually helpful. Not everything that's helpful is what we want to hear. Sometimes helpful is, by definition, constructive, which is why the Apostle Paul says, for the building up of others. Helpful is constructive. Helpful isn't telling people everything they want to hear. Helpful isn't just saying nice things. The goal is not nice. Nice is important. Kindness, of course, is a value. But helpful is what's going to help to build this, what's going to aid, what's going to abet, what's going to support, what's going to help people be built up according to their needs. So sometimes as a parent, I recognize the need for my child right now is to be humbled. Because as a father, I would rather humble them at home than have them humbled in the world. As I often joke with my kids, and I've told you before, and I always tell them, listen, it's either you learn this now or you can go to prison. But trust me, it's much easier now. You know what I'm saying? Like, I understand that it may not be what they want or what they would like, but it's helpful to build up according to their needs. And the same may be true in the workplace, and the same may be true in a marriage. And besides, what's the real issue? When we wrestle with this tension, what's the real issue? The real issue that we all feel, the real issue that we experience when we go through this, is that rather than thinking about their needs, what they really need, their context, their challenge, whatever they're going through, the truth is, we don't want to say it out loud, but I'll say it out loud on your behalf, is that I'm confident that what they need to hear is what I want to say. I'm confident that what they need to hear is what I want to say. Rather than beginning with, what do they need? And how can I help them by bringing something constructive? We start with, I feel strongly about this, so I'm going to go talk to them because I'm confident they need to hear what I want to say. Which reveals the truth. Here's the truth. Most of us are more focused on what we need to say more than on what others need to hear. We convince ourselves, in ourselves and of ourselves, with the conversation we have with ourselves in our head, that people need to hear what we want to say. But sometimes that's not true. Sometimes what people need to hear is not what we want to say. Sometimes actually it's at the cost of our discomfort, at the cost of our inconvenience, that we say something that we don't want to say, but we know they need to hear us. The problem is, let's be honest, we only like to say the things that we like to say. I want to say what's helpful to me according to my needs. I have no problem going to someone and saying, hey, here's what I think you should do. Here's why I didn't like what you did. The reason why we're so confident is because we have resolved in us that we want to say it. The problem is when you truly love someone and care for someone and you see them operating, reacting, or living in a way that isn't helpful, isn't constructive, isn't going to serve them well, and you know, man, you know, I should really say something, but if I say something, it could be misinterpreted. If I say something, they might get offended. If I say something, it might come across the wrong way. And I might become the villain. I might become the mean person in the story. But the truth is, by definition, mean people don't tell the truth. Mean people don't have helpful conversations that build others up according to their needs. Mean people say what mean people want to say to suit themselves and serve themselves. The opposite of mean people, kind people, nice people, generous people, loving people understand that when we're offering a thought, when we're offering a perspective, or offering an opinion, when it's done in love for the benefit of the other person, that's what makes it, which is why the Apostle Paul, the last line of the verse says this, that we should, that it may benefit those who listen. What is the metric that decides whether something should be said? The question is, does it benefit them? It may not be what they want to hear. It may not be the convenient or easy thing, but it is beneficial. The question to ask ourselves is, why am I doing this? Beneficial. Not beneficial to me, but beneficial to them. The problem is oftentimes we're so consumed by ourselves, what we think, what we want, what we need, that there's no capacity, there's no space, there's no room to consider or contemplate what's most beneficial to the person. Next slide, please. And this is very important. Why? Because we can fall into the trap. Again, it's attached to the whole honesty debacle. I'm just trying to be honest. I just want to tell the truth. I know it was mean. I know it was harsh. I know it was judgmental. But I just wanted to say it as it was. Well done. The question is, was it beneficial? Did it help them? Did it build them up according to their needs? Because content's important, but here's the thing the Apostle Paul wants to see. It's this: intent is as important as content. Meaning, it's not just what you say that matters, it's why you say it. And as human beings, we're incredible beings, because oftentimes, or all the time, we're not only computing the words and what's been said and what they mean and the message it's conveying, but we're also trying to rapidly discern. Our subconscious is firing, looking at hand gestures and eyebrow twitches and pheromones in the air and all the things in our bodies to try ascertain, okay, I know what you're saying, but the question is, why are you saying it? And we'd all say, wouldn't we, that when someone who we know loves us, when someone who we know cares for us, when someone who we know wants best, when they come to us in humility, with patience, in kindness, graciously and generously, and offer up to us a perspective, an opinion, or a challenge that we don't like and we don't want and we resist at first, we all would agree, wouldn't we, that in the long run we look back and think, man, that is a true friend. That is a trustworthy person. Because it would have been so much more convenient for them. It would have been so much easier for them if they had said nothing. But the fact that their intention was for my benefit, I'm willing to open myself up to the possibility of the content. Intent is as important as content. When content is delivered with selfish intent, it's never beneficial. For it to be beneficial, it has to be, I care for you, and here's why I want to say what I want to say. So it's the Apostle Paul's advice, put the whole verse together, verse 39. He says, do not let any unwholesome talk come out of your mouths, be gatekeepers. Don't allow this trash sewage talk to come out of your mouth, but only what is helpful to the building up of others according to their needs, that it may benefit those who listen. So this is laying the foundation. So here's dynamic number one. Here's the first dynamic that determines what people hear despite what we say. Here's number one. Words are weighty. Words are heavy. Words can be weaponized. But here's the thing. Here's the first dynamic. But words are not equally weighted. Watch this. Words are weighty. Words are powerful. But words aren't equally weighted. Some words carry more weight than others. And what determines a word's weight, generally speaking, are two things: the content and the intent. Who's it coming from, and why are they saying, and what are they saying, and how are they saying it? For example, wouldn't we all agree, Navin Dublin Doc, that negative words weigh way more than positive words? Negative words weigh way more than positive words. A negative word in general is more weighty than a positive word. But a negative word from someone that you love, someone you trust, someone you look up to, someone you care for, man, that carries way more weight than just a general negative word. It recently has happened to me. I was hanging out with some family, and someone I love and respect, having a conversation, and he just, you know, I guess he was having a bad day, started criticizing me. And as he was criticizing me, I was like, man, what's going on? This is not comfortable, you know? Why is he saying these things? And in the moment, I reacted and I responded and defended myself, as we often do. But afterwards, I just couldn't shake this conversation. Like if anyone in the street said that, I would have been like, oh, that's bad. But you would just, like, you know, let it go. You know what I'm saying? But because it came from someone that I love, care for, and respect, it had so much more impact. And in fact, there's been a whole, you know, there's been so many studies built on the impact of words. For example, did you know that they say that it takes 9 positive words to counter the impact of 1 negative word? You know that? For every 1 negative word you hear, it takes 9 positive words to counteract the impact of that word. Now, here's the problem is, this research is nearly all done in the workplace. It's all done in corporate offices trying to figure out the dynamics of management and positive, negative communication. But my question is, if it's 9-1 in the workplace, then what is the ratio in the home? What is the ratio in a marriage? What is the ratio between a father and son, mother and daughter, siblings? What is the ratio for best friends? If it's 9-1 in work, then could it be as high as 30-1 in the home? Again, I don't have any research to back this up, but it's got to be a whole lot higher than the workplace, because we don't really generally care that much about what people in the workplace think about us. We care a little more than the average stranger, but we certainly don't care anywhere near as much as we care what our father, mother, brother, sister, husband, wife, our children think of us. So if it's 9-1 in the workplace, then it might be as high as 30-1 at home. So the question is, what steps do we take to ensure that we don't become the mean person in our own story? That we're not the unloving, disconnected father that one day the kids talk about. We're not the one that when the marriage falls apart, that the ex-wife, what can we do to make sure that we are not the mean person in our story? And the answer is, don't let any critical, cynical, or words of comparison come out of your mouth. Because when we allow critical, cynical, and comparative words come out with the intent to judge, to demean, to degrade, to dishonor, what happens is we become the villain in our own story. And because words are weighty, but words are not equally weighted, we have to also understand that wisdom would dictate, again, if you're not a Jesus follower, this is good advice, wisdom would dictate that we should lean far more towards the positive and constructive than the negative and critical. That in general, if it's so much easier to be negative and judgmental and critical, then our propensity, our default mode, like we should work on making sure that all of our key relationships are bolstered and wrapped and supported in positive and constructive. That's just good if in general advice. But if you're a Jesus follower, and we want to make sure that we're godly people, we're God's people in the world, and not mean people, then we have to understand this is our native language. You may come from Romanian, speak Romanian, or Brazil, Portuguese, or wherever you're from. That's not your native language. As a Jesus follower, your native language is the language of heaven. What is the language of God? It is loving. It is gracious. It is kind. It is merciful. It is generous. And again, it is positive and it is constructive. God, of course, there's conversation times we need to have that are hard conversations that reveal truths, but they're for our benefit, that we may be built up according to our needs. So as the people of God in the world, our default mode shouldn't be judgmental criticism, but positive constructionism. And again, let me talk very specifically. If you're here and you're an employer and you want to be in a place with your employees where you can have, you know, critical conversations, where you want to critique, where you want to shape, want to bring feedback, then the best way to create margin to deliver that content, the best way to deliver criticism, is to bolster your people with positive and constructive words. To think about, before you have that critical conversation, look at the last 10 conversations and ask yourself, what was my intent and my content over the last 10 conversations? Because to have that one conversation in the workplace that's going to help them and grow them and build them, and to have a place in their heart where they receive that criticism, there should be 10 constructive and positive affirmations of the good things they do. It's so hard, isn't it, sometimes to be proactive and to acknowledge and celebrate the good things people do. It's so easy to react and point out the bad things people do. Let me also caution you and kind of give you a word of advice. If you're a father, a mother, but let me just talk to dads specifically. Because sometimes as men, it's so hard to convey our feelings. And again, we come from a long line of generations where that hasn't been modeled to us well. But we have the opportunity to break that cycle in our generation. I tell people all the time that when I was growing up, I had a very difficult relationship with my dad. And my dad was a very messed up person. And there was a lot of violence and alcohol and drug abuse in our house. And there's many times where my dad would overreact and physically take that out on me. And perhaps, who knows, if that had been found out at the time, we may have even taken off. I don't know. But one of the reasons why myself and my dad have been able to have a good relationship despite that is because whenever my dad would mess up, oftentimes he would apologize. And he would say the words to me that he never heard from his own dad. He'd say, "I'm sorry, I love you, and I'm proud of you." And so somehow, in all the chaos and toxicity of that home, I was able to hear the heart of my father, even though he was a broken man. That's how, doesn't justify it, nor does it excuse it. But it helped me as a 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12-year-old boy to see through my father's brokenness and to see his intent. If you're a father, let me tell you this, your sons and your daughters need to hear 30 more words of affirmation and constructive feedback than criticism. And I get it, because I'm in. I got a 16-year-old, almost 17, 11, 10, and 3, and life is crazy, and it's just so easy to react and stop that and do this, and you know, and so I stop myself. No, I'm the parent. They're the children. I had to get in control. If I'm gonna react with criticism, I gotta ask myself the question: have I sowed good, positive, constructive seed into my children? So when I bring this content, they understand my intent. We got to make sure that we don't allow toxic cycles to continue on next generation, but that we're affirming and sowing into our children. What is this dynamic I'm talking about? The dynamic is very simple. It's love. And the Apostle Paul says we need to walk in the way of love. Here's our second last scripture. In the next chapter, Paul concludes his conversation and says in verse 1 chapter 5, follow God's example, therefore. And again, as I always tell you, what is therefore, therefore? Go back and read chapter 4, and you'll understand what the therefore is there for. He's saying responses, because of all I've said before, he says we should follow God's example as dearly loved children. What is Paul exemplifying to us in this conversation? Positive, constructive affirmation. It's a challenge. There's some things here we have to wrestle with, that we might be the mean person in our story, but if we follow God's example, understanding our value and worth, and walk in the way of love. Love isn't a destination, it's a direction. And every day we choose to walk in the way of love. And here's the definition of what that looks like. Not our definition. Oh, I was loving, I was being honest. No, the definition of love is just as Christ loved us. And gave himself up for us. Standard is, Jesus Christ, the Son of God and Savior of the world, came into our world, bore the brunt of our brokenness, experienced our pain, the hurt, the betrayals, all the things that we go through, was falsely accused, falsely tried, beaten, scourged, flogged, humiliated, spat on, ridiculed, led up a hill, and crucified. And even on that cross, what was the last thing Jesus said? Was it critical? Was it negative? No. Forgive them, Father. They know not what they do. And on that cross, as he took his last breath, he didn't just die to die sick. He died for us. He died for you. For my sin, for your sin, to set us free from the negative cycle of bitterness and selfishness and meanness. And to create the possibility that as a free people, made alive again by his Spirit, that we can set a different path, that we can live a different journey, that we can tell a better story. And that we in our world can love just like he did. By understanding that our words are weighty, but some words are weightier than others, and that we can sow good seed into our world, into our relationships, to make the world a better place. I guess you could summarize it by going back to the gold standard, by doing unto others what we would have others do unto us. So I want to encourage you as we pray. Let's take stock. Let's process. Ask ourselves the question, whether it be in our marriages, in our workplace, in our school, with our friends, have we somehow fallen into the trap of becoming the mean person in our story? Oh my gosh, Lord, help me. Help me to become a better gatekeeper of what comes out of my mouth. Help me as I process my intent to make sure that the reason why I'm saying things is to help other people, to build them up according to their needs, and to deliver that content in a way that is beneficial, that is loving, that is gracious. It may not be easy for me, but it's necessary for them. And as we do so, I believe this, not only will God help us develop better friendships, relationships, marriages, create a new kind of atmosphere in the workplace, but perhaps it could even transform our world. So in this case, the mean person is not out there, but the mean person is right here. And what do we do about ourselves? We walk in the way of love, and love like Jesus did, being gracious, kind, and generous. How we talk to others, how we talk about others, and what we say over others. And in doing so, that's what it looks like to be the children of God in the world. Amen.